Good evening, my friends. Welcome back to Latitude Live and the Cyber People podcast. I can't believe it. This is actually episode 4 of season 2. So we are making progress. And this is actually a unique moment in the history of the Cyber People podcast, because this is actually the first time I've ever done 2 podcasts in 1 week. So we're not quite at the Joe Rogan level yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there. This evening, we are very, very, very privileged and grateful to have with us a very special guest this evening, the extremely photogenic Craig Ford. Now, I could introduce Craig Ford. He is an unusual hybrid of a man. He is a cybersecurity specialist, but he's also an author and a journalist and one of the busiest people in cybersecurity, racking up some serious air miles. I don't think this gentleman will ever have to pay for another plane ticket in his life with all the air miles he's racking up. Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Would you mind telling us who you are and what you do?
No worries. Thanks, Will. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm really looking forward to the conversation, but it's always weird talking about yourself, but essentially, I'm the CTO for Batem Solutions, Indigenous cybersecurity firm headquartered out of Brisbane. I'm a cybersecurity engineer, CTO, bit of an ethical hacker background. And as you said, I'm also a author of 5 books now, with another one in the pipeline for the end of the year, and a journalist now for sort of contributing to, I think it's about 5 cybersecurity magazines across the world. So I'm quite busy, do a lot. And I'm also the on the board of directors for Australian Information Security Association. So I've got a couple of hats and I do a few different things, but yes.
Sounds like more than a couple. How do you do that, Craig? And in recent pictures, I've seen that you had a totally shaved head, and today you're actually, you know, your hair is growing back. Have you just been so busy with traveling and all of your various commitments, you haven't had time to shave it? What's going on? Is it getting cold?
It's getting a little cold, but okay. It sort of usually hovers between somewhere between almost completely shaven to and only having the beard hair growing a little bit longer like this. But to be honest, I'm getting a little thin towards the back end, so I usually keep it pretty short.
Me too. It's a solar panel, and it's one less thing we have to do in the morning. Just roll out of bed and get on with your day. Just before we, absolutely. And I've noticed when I go your style, when I go short, people like sort of rubbing my head for good luck. I feel like some kind of good luck Buddha. Does that ever happen to you? Do people rub your head for good luck?
I haven't had that yet, but I have seen others get it done. So I just haven't had the pleasure yet, though.
Okay. All right. So just before we press record, you mentioned to me that this week is unique in the sense that you've been in Brisbane for the whole week. Now you live in Brisbane, right? Or slightly out, I think about an hour away. It's like a commute of about an hour.
Yeah, up on the north
during
side.
Which you do your writing?
Yes.
Okay. And that's unusual for you to be in Brisbane for a week.
Yeah, it seems to be, particularly this year, for some reason, I seem to be bouncing around the country a little bit more than usual, but all the multiple responsibilities with Acer and with Batem has sort of, been bouncing around quite a bit, and a little bit with the book stuff, promoting and everything else. So definitely frequent flyer miles, I think, are racking up quite quickly.
Absolutely. Give us a bit of a flavor. Like, why are you traveling so much? Can you kind of give us an insight into what is it like to be Craig Ford? Talk us through the last month, if you could, to give us a sense of what you've been doing and how you juggle all of your various things.
So I think probably with my Acer side, with the board of director role, I sort of do a lot of, I guess you'd say, cybersecurity events. Like I flew to Perth last month to do what they would call a boardroom hypothetical event with Australian Institute of Company Directors, sort of help them run some sort of mock scenarios and sort of help the board understand a little bit more about cyber and what their responsibilities and how to react to a sort of a cyber breach or a cyber incident. So doing a few events like that. Also go to quite a few conferences as part of the Acer role. They put on quite a few, in one in each state. So I attend quite a few of those and add the CTO role and, consulting with a lot of Batem's clients. It adds up pretty quickly. So
you have a very understanding family. They must
probably
miss you.
Better than they deserve sometimes, but
You know, it's remarkable. I mean, the whole reason why I got into this podcast game is because in cybersecurity, I come across so many unusual people. In fact, by the way, I believe congratulations are in order, because I believe that this month you were on the cover of Top Cyber News magazine. Am I right?
Yes, that's so, right. The only Australian to pretty much ever be on that international magazine, which is a pretty impressive honor. So.
Wow. Sporting the beard.
Yes, sporting the beard, definitely.
Yeah, no, it was a great cover.
12 months ago, I'd never had a beard before, and now I kind of started to grow it sort of just before, I think it was around September, October last year, and I just loved it, so it stayed.
I'm jealous. If I didn't shave, you wouldn't really see the results of not shaving unless there was a very bright light behind me, in which case you'd probably see some alfalfa sprouts.
So you can't quite rock the full beard then?
No. I'm not as follically well endowed as you, Craig. So I always admire a good beard when I see one. Now, on the cover of that magazine, they called you an outlier. Why did they do that?
I actually asked the same sort of question. It was the thoughts behind it was the fact that I do things a little bit differently, particularly around my sort of writing style and the way I approach cybersecurity. I guess you could say probably even less than 5 years ago, there was a lot of ego, I guess, in cybersecurity. And I try and sort of skip past all of that and try and make it accessible to as many people as I can, and you know, get rid of all the jargon and the nonsense noise that we don't really need to put in it, and just educate, share our knowledge, and make everyone a little bit safer. But yeah, that's, I think, was the main reason behind it. They feel I was like to do things my own way and do things a little bit differently and just approach sort of issues and scenarios in a different way.
The Frank Sinatra of cybersecurity, doing things your way.
Yes, so, essentially.
That's awesome. So how did you get into cyber? Because you're obviously someone who, like, when I look at your background and I read all of the posts and so forth, and I look at the books and things, I'm thinking, okay, this gentleman's, he's in cyber, but his true calling, his true vocation seems to be journalism, writing. How did you end up doing cyber? I think it's great that you combine the two, and I don't think I've ever really met any other cybersecurity people who are also authors. How did you find yourself in this industry?
Sort of tech, right from when I can remember, anything technical, anything sort of electronic, I kind of understood. It sort of was a natural sort of move, I guess. When I left school, I sort of just fell in like a normal generic IT kind of support in a small country town in New South Wales. I sort of become a trainee in IT and sort of loved the sort of support and pulling things apart and fixing things. So that was a bit of a natural calling to start with, but it's sort of around, I think I'd been in IT for around 10 years almost. And I sort of didn't have any degrees or anything like that. I'd just sort of been naturally taught and sort of, I think I had a Cert 3 and Cert 4 in TAFE at the time. And I'm like, I want to do a formal qualification of some sort and maybe move into like a CIO or as, you know, a IT manager kind of role. That was where I was thinking when I sort of signed up to do a master's with Charles Sturt University. But yeah. As I was sort of signing up and sort of selecting some of my modules for the degree, I'm like, there was a unit there, I think, for digital forensics. And I think it was incident response, I think, was the other one. And I'm just out of complete randomness, I said, you know, that sounds really cool. I wouldn't mind doing that. So I actually selected them and I did the units. And to be honest, I got the bug. I loved it. I just went, oop, that's where I'm going now. And I kind of haven't stopped since. And that was around 2012 or 2013, I believe. I sort of started that sort of merge across and I sort of did that, I guess you would say, dual IT as much cyber as I could for a few years until I did the full jump. But yeah, it was one of those first units, which I randomly chose because I thought it sounded cool. Yeah, it sort of changed my whole direction, which is a little funny, but.
And how did that evolve into the writing part of it, the journalism, the books? How did that all come about? And when you, all of the traveling that you do, is it traveling that is associated with all of your professional guises, or is it more the ACER stuff? Is it more the BATM stuff? Is it more the writing stuff? Like, what is it that has you leading such a kind of rock and roll lifestyle where you're living out of a suitcase and
never thought of it that way, but it kind of is, isn't it? Yeah,
living out of a suitcase on tour all the time, you know.
So I think sort of the couple of questions you got there, I think the writing itself, like literally if you'd asked me 5 or 6 years ago, because I think my first book was published in around September 2019, and I think I started the writing where I'd done a few articles and stuff like that was sort of late 2018. But if you'd asked me before that, I would have literally laughed at you if you'd had said, are you going to write a book or you're going to do a novel? It was never a thing that I was even interested in. I didn't even think it would be a thing at all.
You were never a writer before.
Fan of a few books like, you know, your Inheritance series, like Dragons and things like that. That was kind of cool, but it was never really an aspiration or a consideration. But it was, I actually went to the last ACSE cyber conference in Canberra. I think it was mid to late 2018, somewhere there. And I was working as a security engineer, sort of helping run a MSP's incident response team and SOC team at the time. And as I was there sitting between with all the government departments and most of the big enterprise, no one was talking about the risk that MSPs actually were to all of them and all of the clients, holding all the keys, which is a sort of a scenario I think has come up a few times since, but there was no one talking about it at the time. And I'm like, someone needs to talk about it. So after the conference, I actually remember seeing like a little post. I used to read articles from CSO Online, and there was a thing on the bottom saying if you had something to say or you wanted to share something, to submit something, and they would have a look and publish it if they thought it was something their viewers and readers would like to hear. So I did. And I pitched the idea for MSPs being a bit of a risk. And I think there was 200 articles after that since then. Whoa. So it's basically just the start of that writing journey. And it was
the elephant in the room.
Yep. And literally, just dropped that sort of bomb and they sort of loved it. And the books themselves, it was probably about 50 or 60 articles in. A colleague of mine said, I really love the way that you write in more of a story-like scenario instead of really technical heavy jargon. Yep. And they said, you should write a book like that. So that's where the first one was born.
Well, you did say earlier you talked about the ego in cybersecurity and getting rid of the jargon. To what extent has that been a sort of guiding principle for you? And why does that bother you? Like when you say ego and cybersecurity, would you mind unpacking that and jargon? Like why do you want to? What's the motivation here? What are you trying to do? You're obviously trying to make people aware in a way that they understand, so that it's not just some technical wizardry, right?
But yeah, they all think we're hiding in the basement with the gloves and the hacker hoodie thing.
Yeah, yeah,
irritates me that image. So I fight against that every time. But
I know.
But I guess I read there's kind of a couple of reasons why. I think initially the reason I wanted to make it, I guess, so accessible and remove a lot of that jargon is, and particularly the ego thing is, even when I was starting out trying to get in the industry, I had 10, 12 years of IT experience before I got to that point. And even I found it hard to sort of sit there and read some of that stuff and go, wow, this is dry, this is heavy. How do people even understand some of this stuff? So me having that kind of background already was going, what's going on here? How is anybody else going to sort of, you know, without that first initial technical background, if you wanted to get in the industry, that is a huge sort of steep learning curve and it's not the most enjoyable stuff to read. So generally I just wanted to kind of share my sort of journey and sort of my experiences and sort of sometimes I felt I was probably sharing a little too much, being my inner security self going, no, don't share, you know, keep this stuff to yourself. But I wanted to, you know, even though I had a 10-year IT background kind of thing, I wanted to let everyone know, that it's okay that if you get a few knockbacks, you sort of keep at it. It's a journey, and share my experience so they, you know, don't feel alone in that whole journey of, you know, because cyber is not the easiest industry to get into. So, you know, just getting a bit more of an insight and sort of the way I went into it and how I sort of succeeded and, you know, sharing as much as I can with as little technical jargon as I could. Obviously, it's cybersecurity. There's jargon no matter how much you try and pull it out. But yeah, the simpler you can make it so anyone can pick it up, and particularly with the Hacker IM book. So I always wanted to make it so that anyone sort of, you know, if you're a graduate from uni or you're just a business owner that goes, I want to learn a little bit more about cyber, you can just pick it up and read it and go, okay, I didn't understand 100% of it, but now it kind of makes sense. And that was the sort of the approach. I didn't want to make it so it was for the really highly technical people. It was for that more people who just wanted to learn a bit more and the people trying to get in. But
so are you, Craig, are you trying to open the industry up and get people to come in from the outside and yes. demystify it, simplify it? You know, you've obviously struck a chord. I think that a lot of people are indebted to the ones that do ask, you know, like we say, there's no such thing as a silly question, right? Often when you ask a silly question, the people who are a little bit too proud or I think proud's a good word to ask the silly question. They're indebted to the people who just think, you know what, screw it. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. This is all overly complicated. Complexity creates dependency. Let's just keep it really simple. You know, I met a very interesting lady in Melbourne last week who actually said to me, you know what, Will? She said, I think the term cybersecurity is not particularly helpful. Because cyber, it's like, okay, you're automatically making it a super technical thing. You're conjuring up the images of the people in basements with the hoodies on, surrounded by the matrix code cascading around them. Why don't we stop calling it cybersecurity? Why don't we just start calling it security? Why don't we stop calling CISOs CISOs? Why don't we call them chief security officers? And just, you know, take all the bullshit out of it. Pardon my French.
It'd be simple, right? It would be a lot simpler. And I agree. Like, I think we like to use jargon. And most of the time when people, I sort of get into some of those technical conversations, most of the time the ones saying it are saying it deliberately to make themselves sound like they know more, or they want to, you know, feel like they're a little sort of higher than everybody else. And I don't get that. Like, it should be around, to me, I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to be in the room and learning and sort of picking up. And I've always thought you could always learn something from somebody else. Doesn't matter if they're your junior or they're your senior. Listen, open your ears. And that's what I think, particularly around cybersecurity industry. We sort of seem to close ourselves off a bit, which is getting a little better. We're sort of opening up a little bit more and being a bit more open about the conversations. But we want to make it this whole secret wizardry thing in the sort of the basement and have that whole hacker hoodie of appeal. But you know, if we're really going to make a difference in keeping people safe and being a pretty secure and sort of keeping our data safe, which is a huge problem right now, the only way we're going to do that is if we educate everybody. It can't be just the tech people doing the work. It needs to be general, everyday mums and dads that at least have an understanding of how to sort of protect themselves a little bit. I always sort of, my general conversations, it needs to be, we need to do something like, you know, the old slip, slop, slap kind of campaigns with sunscreen.
Oh, yeah.
We need to do that, but for cyber, for IT, and go, you know, this is how everyone needs to do the basics, and let's, you know, encourage that at least basic hygiene from everybody. If we can do that, our job becomes a hell of a lot easier.
Absolutely.
But I don't know how we get to that point, and I don't know how we could make a memorable, cool little, you know, Australia-wide kind of campaign that could make people remember to do at least those basics, but we need to figure out how to do it. But
I think you do know how to do it, Craig, and I think you actually have begun doing it. And we will go down the rabbit hole on your books in just one moment. But just going back to the whole point of jargon and ego, I know that you are a huge advocate of women in STEM, more specifically cybersecurity. I know that you've made a number of contributions, publications on CSO Online, to which you referred earlier. Also Women in Security magazine, very, very impressive stuff. Do you think, because I often think about this, I think why are there not more women in cyber? What is it about the industry? What are we doing that is discouraging more female participation, more diversity and inclusion? What do we need to stop doing? What do we need to start doing? What do we need to do more of? What do we need to do less of? What are your thoughts on all of that? I know you've been thinking about this for your whole career.
I have. And you're right. Like, I'm a huge fan of diversity in general. For Batem, where I'm the CTO, it's actually an Indigenous cybersecurity firm. So it's about encouraging more Indigenous aspirants through as well. So it's diversity in general, I think, is really, really important, particularly around the sort of the complexity of some of the security risks we have these days. If we don't have that difference of opinion, if we're all thinking the same way that we always have, we're never going to get any sort of leaps and bounds in that sort of real improvement. So we need that diversity in general. But particularly around the women in security, Australia, I'm pretty sure it's 17% participation for females in cybersecurity, which is appalling when you think about it.
That's way worse than tech in general, right? I think tech is more like 70-30, 80-20. So we're like the worst at it.
Much worse, And I think part of that problem, and a lot of, because I have a lot of conversations with young women sort of trying to get in the industry, I try and help as many as I can, but most of them still see cyber as a very big boys club. It has that whole, the ego thing that we do. We need to break down some of that and go, hey, it's not a boys club. It's, you know, let's get rid of some of this, you know, jargon and nonsense. And some of the other reasons, I think, is when you see a job ad in cybersecurity, even the sort of, you know, what they would call entry level, which most of the time they're not entry level when they see their entry level, particularly when you require 3 years or experience or certification. But we won't get into that rabbit hole because that's another rabbit hole. But
yeah, that's another podcast.
That is another podcast. We could talk about that one forever. But the difference is with a lot of the young women I sort of talk to is they, when a man sees a job ad, if they meet probably 50 or 60% of the job, their requirements, most of the men will go, oh, I'll put my hand out for that and give it a go. But if a lot of the time the young women that are looking at it, they go, I don't meet at least 80 or 90% of that, so I'm not going to apply. So it's the way that some of those ads are written. They just automatically pull themselves out of the running, which we kind of got to change that perception and go, you know, how can we word some of this as in saying this is some of the desired, but if you have half of this and actually put that in our ad, apply and we'll, you know, see if you meet the requirements. Because most of the time it comes down to not specifically the skills. It's more around the personality and the behavior skills that, particularly if you're talking pen testing, as a bit of a pen testing background, you're looking more for that curiosity, someone that wants to pull things apart and understand how they work and rework them and make them do something they're not. So if I find someone that has absolutely no qualifications but has that real, raw, natural skill set to do that, I will hire them. I don't care what qualifications they've got. That is the person you'll hire. So we need to get them to apply more, if that makes sense. That's part of the problem. And the second one, I think, is definitely that the whole stereotyping, the atmosphere. It's, if you don't see it, you don't want to be it, right? Like, it's the whole sport analogy. And, you know, if you don't see a sports star that's from your community or something like that, you're not going to aspire to be them. So if they don't see female leaders in the cybersecurity space, they're not going to have role models to go after and sort of try and aspire to, basically. And I think that's part of the problem. But it could be, you know, I think there's quite a few issues, but that's a couple of them I think we need to work on at least to start with.
No, I agree. I think that is very, very poignant. The fact that we need to do a lot more to showcase the female exponents of the security industry, of which there are many. I mean, I know you said that there is probably across the board, maybe 17%.
17%, yep.
But there are some absolutely amazing female CISOs out there.
I know some very impressive ones, yes.
And absolutely. Many of whom have presided over very public events. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. So I think that's a perfect segue into your books. Now, I know that the first couple of books that you wrote were A Hacker I Am and A Hacker I Am Volume 2. What was the inspiration for those books, and what was the outcome that you had in mind, the vision that you had in mind? What were you trying to achieve by writing those?
So I think it was sort of a little bit of a prompt from a colleague of mine that sort of said, you know, write a book that is a bit more accessible and a bit more understanding and make it like your articles, because it was easy, fun. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make an accessible cybersecurity book that, you know, any business owner or like a sort of early grad uni student or something like that could just pick it up and then just read it and understand it and enjoy it. But I think the aim to me was more about just dropping that barrier a little bit, sort of pulling back the curtain a bit and going, hey, this is cyber. It's accessible. We can all do it. If you want to learn a bit more, just have a bit of a read. And it kind of almost sort of took a bit of a life of itself. and sort of just went that path. And the name itself is definitely a dig at the hacker in the hoodie scenario. I deliberately put the name just as a bit of a poke at that, because I think that's I don't like the media depiction of, you know, the hacker in the hoodie, because being an ex-pen tester ethical hacker myself, it's, you know, you're more likely to see me in a suit than you are in a hoodie and sort of with the gloves and the typing in the dark rooms with, you know, your Matrix stuff behind you. But yeah, so I always try any opportunity I do is say, you know, look at the person sitting next to you on a train or in the car. That's probably what a hacker looks like, not what you would see in the media. So, but it was I guess trying to pull down some of those veils and make it a bit more accessible and just have a bit of fun with it, which I seem to, if you read some of my stuff, that's kind of my thing. I like to make it a bit more entertaining and a bit more fun. I've even done cybersecurity articles for magazines that, you know, around the three little pigs and explain cybersecurity with the three little pigs. So I think outside the box, but.
You try to take, sort of conventional cultural norms that everyone is familiar with and apply them like a metaphor so that everyone can understand what it's all about. So for people who haven't actually read those two books, how would you summarize them? And how come there's no volume three?
So I think it's sort of the...
Trilogy. Come on, Craig. I need a trilogy here.
I think there probably will be at some point. I think the weird thing is as an author, I sort of look back on those because the first two were self-published. And I sort of move down the traditional publishing path now. So I look back on those and they're not perfect. There's a couple of grammatical mistakes and you're like, oh, I've grown a bit since then, but that's okay. But generally I think they're cyber education and a bit around. So if you're considering moving across into cyber, doing a bit of a career jump or a bit of a career change, it's a good insight to what you might see and give you a bit of a, I guess, an angle of where you might want to go. So parts of different industry, because I talk about, you know, attacking autonomous cars and, you know, accessing systems via printers. And so there's a whole gamut, and there's even, and you know, around imposter syndrome, it's sort of, yeah, basically each of the book would have, I think they're approximately 50 chapters, all standalone. You can pretty much, it's like the old games of choose your own adventure kind of style, where you could literally pick whichever one you want and read whichever one you want.
And showing your age here, Craig.
Yes, I know. It's okay. I feel like sometimes the bit of the dinosaur in the cyberspace. I've been around long enough now, but some of the young ones are quite inspiring to see what they're going to turn out like. But yes, I think I'm showing my age a little bit there, but that's okay. But yeah, that was the style, just to literally make it easy, fun, something enjoyable to read. Anyone could pick up and go, oh, I want to learn a bit more about autonomous cars hacking the mesh networks or something like that. And you can just pick that chapter and read it. And then put it down if you wish and pick another chapter in, you know, a couple of weeks' time, and then you'd really sort of enjoy that journey. But yeah, that was the whole idea. I don't think there was ever really any expectations, I guess, where it would go to a point. It just kind of just formed itself.
Took on a life of its own. Yep. Those are the best sorts of creativity, aren't they? The ones that just, the books that write themselves, you know. I know that we all have at least one book inside of us.
I think so too.
And I hope I hope that people who are listening here tonight will actually sit down and start typing the first chapter of the book that lies within them. And then you've been very busy, Craig. Then you had the for want of a better word, Cyberpunk series.
Yes.
Foresight, Shadow, and Vulcan, which is coming out late this year. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, it's sort of pegged for late in the year, but depends on how well the editing process goes, but that's when it's pegged for, yes. But yeah, so that's the, I call it a hacker fantasy, but the official term, yes, is cyberpunk is what they call it. It fits in that category, but yeah, it's sort of.
Are you a cyberpunk?
I don't think I am. I think sometimes I think it would be cool, but you know, I don't think I am.
But absolutely.
It was kind of born, I guess, around that sort of need to bring more young women into cybersecurity. I sort of was writing for the Women in Security magazine, and I thought, you know, I'd sort of done those two books and I'm like, what's next? What am I going to do? And I'm sitting there thinking, what else could I do to help encourage young women? And it was that whole idea of create a lead female character, which is Sam from the Foresight series, and give them a character or a person or a mythical person that they could look up to and go, ooh, maybe I want to be like her, and sort of go on that whole, and it's in first person in real time, which I might add is the hardest way you can write.
Right.
So you're literally, because basically if it's in first person, if you can do it as in a past tense, you can sort of go through the journey and talk about things. But if it's in current time, in the first person, you've literally got to explain everything in real time as you're doing it. So it's quite a difficult way to write.
It's an immersive journey.
Yes. So it's
so you were sitting on the train on the way home in the evenings, yep. channeling your inner Sam.
Yes.
With your laptop on your knees. Yep. Wow. So
lead female character as a man.
Yeah.
I actually did it reasonably okay, I think.
What's the feedback? What feedback do you get?
Really good, actually. And I got a female editor that does most of my books. So, and she actually.
Is that Katie?
No, it's not Katie. Katie's my co-author for the last book, Vulcan. Which we'll get to.
Oh, no, Shadow World.
The Shadow World, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's basically sort of as I was going through it, and she's like, you actually got this really well. She helped me a few things where no, a girl wouldn't say it quite that way. So there was, she helped me out on a few things. So that's good. But yeah, it was generally just around creating that book and creating that character and giving that real world insight into a hacker's mind, basically.
Right. And
in that first person, so you go along that journey with her and her experiences and as a cyber awareness kind of a lover, I guess you would say. I've got some nuggets in there that is a bit of cyber awareness stuff, a bit of education as you go through. And yeah, the feedback is really, really good, which is great.
How immersive do you get, like, Craig, and when you write these books, when you're writing like A Hacker I Am, how, and you're channeling, you have to, if you want to write about these people, you have to kind of become them. How deep do you get?
I think the bonus around writing on the topic is I kind of have that natural knowledge of the technical side of things. But sometimes I've got it sort of, when I'm on the train, because that's when as you know, that's when I do most of my writing. Yeah. I sort of sometimes almost miss my stop. I get that immersed and just sort of really get in the mind and sort of start writing away. So sometimes I've almost missed my stop, but I haven't yet, which is great. I sort of really get in and focus. So I don't notice a lot that goes around me once I start really getting into that channel. So it's a good way to use dead time that you can't really use because there's not much signal on the train line. You can't really do anything else. You're stuck there. So, works perfect.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And the fact that you're able to cut out all of the, all of the action in your surroundings, all the other people, what they're doing and just go down the rabbit hole. It must be liberating.
Yeah, it's
a flight
different.
Of fancy.
It's quite enjoyable, actually. And without saying too many spoilers, the second book, I actually flick and give you the bad guy's perspective. So I flip completely the other's perspective so you can see the intertwining of the webs and how they sort of go against each other and the different thought trains. And, it gets pretty deep. But
So Sam is the protagonist in all three books.
Yes.
And the antagonist is this evil male hacker.
Yep, yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Fantastic.
So basically on the second one, you get his perspective. He's in the mind, sort of what he's doing and what he's doing. And then on the third one, it switches back.
Okay. Are these available in Audible as well?
The Hacker Fantasy isn't yet, but I'm working on that. Yep.
All right. Don't get someone else to do the reading. You do it, Craig. You've got a great voice. Yeah.
Maybe not for the female lead character. I think that probably should be a girl.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The shadow I could probably do. Yes.
Yes. Yes. You in falsetto would be very entertaining, but would perhaps, ruin my ability to suspend my disbelief. Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about the shadow world. I mean, this is really interesting for me because one thing I've noticed is that with cyber, as it's becoming more and more public, more and more events in the newspapers and things like that, even someone who's not remotely technical, who has got no connection to the technical world, will be aware of cybersecurity and what's going on in the media. And when there's an event, they hear about it. It's now an everyday topic that, you could stop anyone in the street and they could tell you something about it. I'm also aware that a lot of the perceptions are not particularly helpful. And obviously, whenever you're trying to change the world, the way you do that is you start with the kids, right? You start at the educational level. So the shadow world for me is really, really, really interesting. So can you share a little bit about the book and why you believe it's so important for children to understand online risks?
So yeah, it was So the shadow world, basically, it was kind of a random conversation with Katie and I one day, of saying, I guess the cyber education and the cyber awareness we're all doing is pretty much we leave it mostly until really late in high school or as people are in their jobs. And it's kind of too late, I guess you would say. We have ingrained sort of way we do things, that's sort of behaviors, and sort of we already sort of got that mindset of how we do things and how it's going to work. So it's sort of a, I think, a real need to sort of, particularly these days, kids are almost born with iPads or iPhones in their hands. They are very much digital natives now. And I think sort of the book itself was more around, you know, giving them that education and those, I guess you would say, knowledge enough so that they know what the sort of the risks are as they really start to use some of those digital spaces, particularly sort of that mid to late primary school, because they will have their own devices at school then. They'll be starting to do homework and stuff through there, using apps all the time. And scarily enough, they're starting to use social media and stuff towards the end of primary school, which is a little scary if you ask me, but that's okay. But
and they're using AI to cheat on their homework.
Yes, they're doing that now too. It's only going to get worse. So idea was to really, I guess you would say, make it a conversational thing, make it so sort of similar to my style of the Hacker AM, make it story-like, make it a bit more entertaining, a bit more fun. But there's some really heavy topics in there, like, you know, cyberbullying, cyber stalking, things that parents probably don't know how to start those conversations and,
yeah,
you know, really go through that sort of space with them and make it a journey so that they feel comfortable that we know when we're in a spot that we're in a bit of trouble now. And it sort of explains, you know, go to a trusted adult or go to your teacher and have conversations about these things and not make it as a bad thing. Make it as in, this is a place we all live now. This is the journey. These are the risks. Let's talk about it and actually be open about it and understand and be comfortable in the space and know when to go, I need help, and put your hand up. Right. So it was sort of that whole premise of teach in a way that's a bit fun so they'll remember it and it makes sense, but then make it so that they know when to put their hand up and go, I need to talk to a trusted adult or a teacher or somebody about it. And we kind of did a bit of a twofold scenario with it, because we've done all that in the front section. But then we've actually put a couple of questions after each of the chapters so the teachers or the parents know to how to prompt a few questions about what they're doing on social media or what they're doing online. Particularly with online gaming, you see them in the chats all the time talking to complete strangers. They have no idea where they are or where they're from, and that's, you know, 7 and 8 year olds, you know, set loose on these online gaming platforms, and it's a little scary. So, and it talks about that and how, and not to trust, because they are trusting at that age, not to trust what people tell them online unless they actually know who they are. And to sort of ask your parents and go, hey, this is a person they want to meet online. Should I do this? You know, actually have those conversations. But, and then we've put in what they call the back matter, which explains the different terms, you know, what the internet is, what, you know, what cyber means, what the dark web is, and explains those in sort of kind of like a cyber thesaurus, basically explaining it in plain language. What are these different things, so that they understand what their kids are talking about? Because it's okay for digital natives, like that's all they live and breathe. But, you know, it's educating them as well as the parents and the teachers as they read it. So it's hopefully it'll have a more rounded effect. It won't just educate the kids, it'll educate the parents and the teachers at the same time. So yeah, that's the whole idea behind it.
Okay, so the books are designed not just for the kids, but for the educators and the parents.
Yes,
okay.
To sort of give that crossover. So it's the age group specifically is aimed for eight-year-olds to about 12. Could be a little bit older, could be slightly younger if you're sort of with a parent. But I think generally, it's sort of about educating the whole ecosystem, but particularly the kids first, and just creating those conversations and making it a bit more approachable. Which I think is part of the problem, because parents don't know how to start those conversations. And usually it's that whole hard line of, no, you can't use it. And being a cyber person, my kids don't touch any of that sort of stuff. Like they're way too young for that yet. But it's going to get to the point where they're going to. And it should be more around the education, not just, you know, the negative and no, you can't do it. It should be about sort of like learning to ride a bike. You use the training wheels, you get safe, and you take them off, and you're good to go. So it's that same premise of trying to give you the knowledge, the understanding, and hopefully overall make a safer generation online so they'll be a bit more prepared and a bit more understanding on it. So
Exactly. So they're designed for children of 8 years old and above, and for people who are even less technically advanced than 8 year olds, like grown-ups.
Yes. Yeah. Even the grown-ups, I think, would probably quite enjoy it. They probably enjoy the whole journey, and you'd learn just as much as the kids will. And that's the whole idea, is it was aimed at the kids because the kids is where we need to start. But I think everyone can learn a bit from it. And particularly if you can get parents to read it with their kids and actually make it something to do together, and the classrooms get the teachers to read it to the kids, everyone will learn from it, and it will just create that whole conversation and the ecosystem. And I think it would be great. But that's the plan. Absolutely. Hopefully it will work.
Oh, well, you use the analogy of riding a bike, and, you know, when we all learned to ride a bike, who was the hand that was pushing us along? Yep. It was always our parents, right? We did it together as a unit. And that's
what we need to do again.
Sounds like you're taking that same approach.
Yes.
So what has been the adoption of this so far? Like, to what extent is this becoming part of the Australian curriculum?
I'm working on that part. I'm sort of trying to get it out as much as I can, particularly with got a few big backers. There's actually 5,000 copies going out to schools. I won't reveal who it is that's doing it because that's their thunder. But literally they're going to be donating 5,000 copies out to primary schools. And I'm trying to get a few more sort of initiatives to sort of push it out there. So eventually at least every library would have one or two copies so that kids can just borrow it. It's particularly the book, it's not really about the money. It's about the education side. So I'm happy if they borrow it, or every kid in the school borrows it and learns something from it. My job is done. We'll get a better education and a better ecosystem. So
it sounds awesome. Now, is this something that's happening elsewhere in the world? Are you aware of any similar programs?
I've sort of seen a few people write really, really young sort of books, and it's only about one particular topic or something. There's a few really good ones where it's just around, you know, just cyberbullying or just, you know, using online gaming or something like that. But no one that's done it sort of with the multi topics and try and make it a bit more integrated and a bit more of the full topics.
Absolutely.
So I haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping that I'm quite happy if there's a few others that try and do it as well, or just use ours. That's fine as well. As long as it gets that knowledge and that sharing out there, I think that's a good start. So, but yeah, not that I'm aware of yet, but.
Wow. It really is fantastic. And that's why I was so excited to have you on this podcast, Craig, because
it's actually a best-selling Australian book already, and it's only been out for a little over a week, so that's pretty impressive. So
wow. Now, you spoke about wizardry earlier, and you mentioned wizardry and dark arts and so forth on your LinkedIn profile. Everyone loves wizards are hugely popular. Is this a theme you're going to be incorporating into some of your future work, perhaps, you know?
Quite potentially. I've been thinking about that because there's only so much I could probably ride around in that cyberspace, and I'm thinking, what could I do next? And I think there might be something a little bit different. I'm not sure if it will be quite down the wizardry side, but you never know.
Absolutely. Well, look, you're a very engaging communicator. I think you should be definitely producing a lot of, visual footage and so forth, maybe turn some of these books into programs, series, documentaries. Is there anything like that on the cards?
No, nothing at this stage. I've thought about a couple of times, particularly with the kids book. I think there's sort of creating some educational material, some videos, or even something to go along with it to make it a bit more expanded. Nothing particularly in the works yet, but definitely I would love, if anyone out there would like to make a Netflix series or a TV series on my Foresight novels, I'd be so in for that. I think that'd be really cool. But nothing in the plan.
Crowdfunding.
Yeah, nothing in the plan yet. But I think that would be an awesome TV series or movie. But anyway.
I for one, am very excited to see what's going to happen next, Craig. I'm looking forward to 2024. You obviously have an enormous ideas repository in your necktop computer, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next, what Craig Ford produces next for the world. So people who are listening to this, they want to find out more about you. Where should they go? Where can people learn more about these books, buy these books, read them, learn more about what you're doing?
There's probably a couple easy ways. Weirdly, if you Google me, you can actually find me really, really easily, which is really weird for a cybersecurity person, but I have my own website, craigfordauthor.com. Pretty much most of my sort of articles, and I share a lot of the books and the content there. So you can quite easily find me there, or any of the LinkedIn and you know, the other social medias you'll find me as well, which is really odd for a you know, an ex-ethical hacker and pen tester, but we won't get into that sort of rabbit hole as well.
A cybersecurity guy without a shred of paranoia.
I've got a lot of that.
Absolutely
probably,
unbelievable. But... Have him stuffed and put him on the wall. That's a very rare species right there. Craig, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time. You're a very busy chap. I know your family are probably looking forward to seeing you this evening. So we'll leave it there. Really appreciate your time. Really enjoyed the chat. And as I said, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in Craig Ford land in 2024.
Thank
Keep
you.
It up.
It's been very, very good work. Thank you.
Absolutely. You too. Take care. All the best. Bye.